You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
You're listening to The Maggie Don Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Maggie's senior producer, Jamie Martinson. Maggie is off over the next couple of days. She'll be back later this week. But in the meantime, enjoy some best of moments from The Maggie Don Show. Over the next few minutes, you'll hear from Sean Fetteplace of the Main Street Alliance.
Happy hump day. It's Wednesday, and I hope it is as lovely where you are as it is where I am. I needed a little bit of a breather today, if you know what I'm saying, everybody. Took my dog for a long walk in the sunshine and 40-degree weather. Didn't even put on a coat. Hope you've got a chance to gather yourself, get outside, and take care of yourselves. We're going to take care of some business and some politics here today. Plenty to talk about, but don't forget, everybody, it is Wednesday, and that means at 3:30 this afternoon, we are going to have the segment Over the Hump and Trump, where we collectively come together and talk about what brings us joy and healing and what helps us get through these moments, because it is crazy this week, no exception. And I'm so very glad to have a fantastic guest joining me at the top of the show today. His name is Sean Fetteplace. He heads up and helps lead the Main Street Alliance. They were one of the parties that filed suit yesterday to stop the implementation of, I don't even, the memorandum from the Office of Management and Budget that was probably one of the worst legally unsound pieces of gobbledygook I've ever seen come out of a federal executive branch office department. Welcome to the Maggie Don Show. Sean, welcome one and all. So happy to have you join us today to make sense of the breaking news just within the last couple of hours us getting on the air.
Excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
So just before we were about to start the show this afternoon, saw news dropping. It's not a lot of news. It's just a little bit of news because nobody knows what it means. Apparently, the Trump White House reversing course today. Of course, a federal judge enjoining the OMB memo late last night, but rescinding it today with basically no further instruction. So again, another memo this morning from this guy, Matt Vaith, acting director of the White House Office of Management and Budget, states that yesterday's memo, OMB Memorandum M/25/13, is, quote, rescinded. Okay. What's going on, Sean? Help us understand.
Yeah, so the memo went live late Monday, and it was like a chaos grenade got thrown because people didn't know what it meant. I didn't know what it meant. I read it quickly. I went to sleep. I have an eight-year-old at home, so I go to sleep kind of early and woke up and then really fully realized this means that basically anything that isn't defense, Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security, and isn't like staff at the agencies was frozen. You know, student loans, if you're trying to apply for new student loans, like FAFSA wasn't working. Our Medicaid portal in Wisconsin for the state gets money from the feds to pay for that. That was frozen. That's, I estimated, I looked at the math, it's about $500 million a month that we get from the feds to administer our Medicaid program. And there were nonprofits. I'm here at Garver Feed Mill, which is a lovely place, and they have great pizza and coffee. So it's my favorite place to come during the day. And there was a nonprofit here that a significant amount of their full funding comes from the federal government, and they didn't know if they were going to make payroll. So it really had a really negative impact. And thankfully, the courts have intervened. But the White House seems to be trying to get cute and saying that it's rescinded, but we're still doing it. It's very unclear at this point what's happening, but we're going to hold their feet to the fire.
Well, my thanks to you, Sean, for being part of that lawsuit. A judge in the District of Washington, D.C., a federal Article III judge enjoining the implementation or enforcement of that memorandum M-25-13. I had a discussion with one of my colleagues yesterday afternoon, Sean, about whether the point is chaos. And I have made the argument, and I stand by this, that chaos is a byproduct, but chaos is not the point. The point is, one, creating fear and anxiety. And I think in many ways, when you couple it with the executive order attacking DEI, whatever that is, right, a definition which seems to change every day, attacking DEI, attacking climate-related policies, that the point is, when coupled with all of the other actions that the Trump administration is taking, the threat of law enforcement, prosecution of local law enforcement, if they do not allow local law enforcement to be co-opted in the business of enforcing federal law, which is not what's supposed to happen under basic principles of federalism. Now firing assistant U.S. attorneys for doing their job, launching an internal investigation into U.S. attorneys and investigators in the Department of Justice who followed orders and completed January 6th investigations and prosecutions, removing the security details for now apparently included newly today, Jim Mattis, removing security clearances. This is to create fear. And with that fear and the threat of things like losing your job, your livelihood, and the threat of potential criminal prosecution, to get people to do what they know Trump wants without even having to put something like OMB memo M-25-13 in place. That's what I think is really going on here. What do you think the objective is here?
I personally think that there are obviously a lot of people involved with Project 2025, Heritage Foundation, and other folks that really, you know, as much as they talked about during the campaign, you know, this isn't real, like this is not what we're all about. It became very clear that in the early days of this new administration that they were approaching it like they were landing on Normandy, where they were putting their political appointees right away into these agencies and really working to implement a lot of their ideas. If you looked at the metadata, metadata being like if you look at a file, you can tell like who wrote something.
Yes.
The memo that was written by the OMB was actually drafted by members of Project 2025 and Heritage. And so they're really the ones in charge right now, not Trump. And he you know, has the things he's passionate about, immigration, tariffs. He thinks he's, you know, President McKinley. And I don't think I, looking back at that time fondly, as far as economics
yeah,
goes,
it's like, weird.
Yeah, like it really is quite strange. And so so that is very concerning because these folks are prepared, they are determined, and it's up to us to really push back.
Folks, that is Sean Fetteplace. He is with Main Street Alliance, an advocacy group here in the state of Wisconsin. They were one of the plaintiffs that filed suit alongside others yesterday seeking the enjoinment, the halting of the implementation of this bizarro memo from the Office of Management Budget in the Trump White House. Sean, let's get into what comes next with this directive, as well as the other extraordinarily vaguely worded executive orders attacking DEI, specifically as to this funding halt that they attempted to do late Monday, which blew up yesterday, which got enjoined yesterday by a federal judge. What's the next thing people should be looking for in the evolution of this particular effort by the Trump administration to stop funding essential public services that many of us rely on across the state of Wisconsin?
So I would say, first off, let your member of Congress know how you feel about this. I would go to mainstreetalliance.org. We very helpfully have a pop-up petition that you can fill out right now to let them know that this is not okay. Next steps are, it appears what the Trump administration is trying to do is they're trying to say, because the litigation was related to the memo, then the memo doesn't exist anymore. They could just keep doing what they're going to do. And
right,
just without the memo being there, that's, I think the judge is not going to be happy with that, you know, acute effort by them. And so I would expect the judge to come back and say that's not acceptable. It's going to continue through the legal process. And ultimately, it is rather unclear. Right now, my understanding is that these other, this other EO executive order they did on the Green New Deal and on like DEI stuff, that that's still in effect, and like the general freeze is not happening. But we just don't know, because the White House is not being clear about that. So I think the main thing is to keep the pressure up. The main recourse here is through the legal process, but you know, you both need to win in the court and the court of public opinion. And so contact your lawmakers, let them know that this is not okay.
Yeah, I think that's so critical. Again, you can go to mainstreetalliance.org. I got the email, the website correct there, Sean, mainstreetalliance.org. And you can find out who your elected representatives are. Call them up. Let them know that this sort of, I don't know, whacking the broadside of a barn and approaching federal funding and grant programs like this is both stupid and harmful and places Wisconsinites' lives at risk, including the lives and livelihoods of you and many that you know. I'm hearing from Sherry from Horicon on the text line saying, hey, I'm on Badger Care. What's going on? I rely on this to live. Sean, let's turn to Badger Care. Medicaid, that's what we call it here in the state of Wisconsin. There has been so much discussion here in the state of Wisconsin about whether or not we should expand Medicaid and cover tens of thousands of more Wisconsinites. And frankly, Robin Voss single-handedly appears to be the single person that stands in the way of ensuring that more Wisconsinites, including people that you may know, listeners, can get the health insurance and health care that they so desperately need. Why is Robin Voss taking this position, Sean? I don't get it.
He's taking this position because of insurance companies and ultimately the hospitals. It originated really because Scott Walker was running for president and he didn't want to be seen as taking Obamacare. At one point, Scott Walker was actually second in the primary and then pretty spectacularly blew up and got nowhere. I think he didn't make it to Iowa. And
it was the only thing that was good about that election cycle was Scott Walker's like epic implosion, right?
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of Republican union members in Iowa, so he didn't really have a constituency there to be able to win. But he held the line on that. And then it was like a political calculation for them to say, we're not taking this because of political reasons. And then over time.
Oh, we may have lost Sean there for a moment. We're going to work together.
Can you?
Oh, there you are.
Yeah, I am.
We're going to pause Sean for a second, take care of that little tech problem. We'll be right back. My name is Maggie Dawn. Keep it locked right here. Our discussion of Badger Care and Medicaid expansion in the state of Wisconsin continues with Sean Fetteplace of Main Street Alliance after these brief messages.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Excellent, very smart guest at just the right time, because he's breaking news to me so that we can break the news with all of you. Folks, you're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. My guest is Sean Fetteplace. He works with the Main Street Alliance right here in Wisconsin, an advocacy group. And Sean, as we were in break, you were breaking some news. Please share with all of our listeners what you just heard and what's going on. This continues more of the breaking news about this weird OMB memo trying to stop all of this federal funding from going out.
Yeah, so today there were some very confusing comments by the press secretary on whether or not this is like a plan or concept of a memo, I guess, so to speak. And she said that the memo is rescinded, but that it's still in effect. And because of her statement on that, legal action is expected to continue. There's about, I think it's 23 governors or attorney generals have joined litigation on this. And so this is going to continue. We're going to keep our eyes on it, but definitely encourage your listeners to keep up to date and to take action by letting their congressperson know that they should contact the administration and tell them to knock it off.
Yeah, this is just clown show-esque, whether you're talking about the metadata, the rescinded, but it's still in effect. I mean, does the press secretary know what the word rescinded means, Sean? I mean, inquiring minds want to know. She got up on the podium yesterday and lied about a whole bunch of stuff, including the $50 million for condoms in the Mideast, which doesn't exist, isn't a thing, and was totally beside the point. I don't know what rescinded but still in effect means. I guess it means exactly what I told you I think the point of a lot of this is, which is to get executive branch officials to leave, to fill their positions with loyalists, and or to scare the bejiggers out of anybody that remains so that they'll do what Trump wants without them needing such a memo. You know, rescinded, so we're not writing it down anymore, but still in effect, because just like the gosh darn mafia, everybody knows what the boss wants. Sean, as we move forward, again, we're looking at that hearing on Monday. We're looking at the AG case that has been brought, that Wisconsin joined. And we're letting people know that they should go to MainStreetAlliance.org to contact their congresspeople and senators to let them know that the Trump administration should knock this off. What else do you think people should be doing? What's your ask of our listeners so that they can stay on top of this and be sure that their benefits don't get cut off?
Yeah, I would say, I can't imagine too many of your listeners are besties with people who work in the Trump White House, but it really is important just to continue that. I would also say if you are personally impacted by this, if you are not going to be able to make payroll because you're a nonprofit, if you are somebody that is potentially losing your coverage, if you're a childcare provider who's not getting the payments that you're owed, feel free to contact me at Sean@MainStreetAlliance.org, SHAWN@MainStreetAlliance.org. Please don't send me any troll emails. I'd appreciate that. But if you have a genuine story that of impact, do let us know. And we're happy to make sure that your voice and your story gets shared with the public so that they know what's at stake with us.
Folks, that's Sean Fettleplace of MainStreetAlliance.org. We'll put his email in our show notes today. You can find our show notes if you listen to our former or past episode podcasts on Apple Pods, Spotify, or on the Civic Media website at civicmedia.us/shows. It will all be there, including Sean's email. I think people, one of the things I would like people to do, because whether we're talking about this stupid OMB memo that threatens essential benefits for people, things like childcare, the entire nonprofit pipeline, again, that is such a critical safety net for so many people. It's not far off the mark from the stupidity of Robin Voss and his refusal to consider expanding badger care here in the state of Wisconsin. As the budget debate heats up here in the state, Sean, what should people be keeping their eye on as sort of top priorities? And do you think people should start reaching out now to folks like Robin Voss as the Speaker of the Assembly and their elected representatives in state government to ask for policies and a budget that actually serves the middle class and working folks in Wisconsin?
Yeah, so I would say with Medicaid, there's two major issues. The first is bachelor care expansion, which should have been done years ago. We have spent $2.4 billion extra to have worse coverage because Scott Walker did what was called a hybrid solution, where people up to 100% of poverty could get, who are childless adults, could get Medicaid, and then people 100 to 138% of poverty could go into the marketplace. They claim that you can get good quality coverage with no premiums. That's true, but that doesn't mean there's no out-of-pocket costs. And so if you actually do the math for that 100 to 138% of poverty, people could spend up to $9,000 a year on that coverage, whereas with Badger Care, there's essentially no cost sharing. And so there's been a lot of disingenuous, frankly, lies about this, and they think if they just repeat something often enough, it makes it true. It is not true, and we would save another $1.4 billion the next year if we took it. So I would encourage people to read the Wisconsin Policy Forum, did a report called A Picture of Health, and it very clearly lays out what's going on with this. I would say the second thing on Medicaid is postpartum coverage. We are one of two states that has not taken it. The only other state is Arkansas. All we're asking is for the current 60-day window to be extended to a year. And I would encourage people to check out, there's a really great Cap Times article that was released on the 28th. I guess it's yesterday. Long day yesterday for me.
Yes.
And it clearly laid out that Republicans want this. They're Jesse Rodriguez, Mary Felskowski, yes. And Pat Snyder, who's, I like Pat. Like, he's a reasonable guy. And he said, listen, if we're not able to get this done, then why the hell am I here? And so it really is, you know, for a state where on the north side of Milwaukee, the infant mortality rate is worse than Soweto under apartheid. It is an absolute obscenity that we haven't done this, and we need to get it done. So I would say, contact your lawmakers. If you live in a Republican district, contact them and tell them to tell Voss that to get it out of the way and to be able to get this done, because he is the one person at this point that's holding that up.
Tell Voss to get out of the way. Hear, hear. Thank you so much, Sean Fetta, please, from Main Street Alliance. Folks, that Cap Times article, as well as the Wisconsin Policy Forum's coverage of the Wisconsin Badger Care expansion question, I will include in our show notes for today. Sean, please come back soon. We're going to continue this discussion as the budget debate here in the state of Wisconsin heats up. When we come back, everybody, what the heck is going on with RFK? Now he's all of a sudden pro-vaccine? What does this mean for you and your family? Coming up next, and some good sound from his hearing today on Capitol Hill on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.
You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Maggie Senior Producer Jamie Martinson. Maggie is taking a couple of days off. She will return later this week, but in the meantime, enjoy some best of moments from The Maggie Dawn Show. Over the next few minutes, you'll hear from Marquette University Professor Charles Franklin.
Welcome, everyone. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Listen, you can obviously tune in around southeastern Wisconsin on 540 AM. That's coming to you from WAUK, where I broadcast from. But you can listen to this show wherever you can go, by wherever you might go, by downloading the Civic Media app for free. You can also listen to all of our past episodes on Spotify, Apple Pods, wherever you like to get your podcast from. And of course, on the Civic Media Radio website at civicmedia.us. This next portion of the show is something that's been bouncing around in my head for a while. It is the bookend, if you will, or part of the thinking process that I shared with all of you yesterday, really about what is going on. What is this strategy that Donald Trump seems to be deploying? How it's not about populism at all. It's not about serving the middle class. Of course, we can see that in his tariff policy, in his backing away from his promises about inflation. And I'm going to get into tariffs and inflation more in detail tomorrow with my special guest co-host, Tom Paulswitz. But yesterday really focused on what a grift this is and how weak Donald Trump actually is. Of course, it's an interesting table setter with Charles Franklin, the pollster, showing us that on a few items, right, declaring that there are only two genders, declaring an emergency on the border, working towards deporting people here illegally, but of course, a caveat that Americans generally don't want Donald Trump deporting people who have worked and been here a long time, raised families here, and have absolutely no criminal record at all. I'm going to call those the gimmies. But support seems to be much more fractured, much weaker, if there is support at all, and in fact, outright opposition to many of the other things that Donald Trump is doing that he said nothing about during his campaign. And of course, it'll be fascinating to see what transpires as he continues to break promises to the middle class. All of that as some context, as some setup for the discussion today. Because I think as it's becoming clear to many of us in a way that very few people, even Trump supporters, anticipated based on his statements during the election cycle, that Donald Trump's power, whatever it may be, however weak it may be, however fractured, however legally unsound, actually is coming not from the vox populi, not from the middle class, but rather from America's oligarchs, from America's billionaire overlords, of which we have one in particular now in a way that I don't think anyone really anticipated, of course, Elon Musk. But as Donald Trump continues his assault on the rule of law, continues to act in ways that court after court and case after case find illegal and unconstitutional, we'll see continuing injunctions granted, freezing and stoppages of what Donald Trump is trying to do. Of course, we'll see continued vilification of judges adhering to their oaths and following the rule of law and the Constitution of these United States. There'll be more calls for impeachment, and potentially we may eventually see a standoff between the Trump administration and the Article III co-equal branch of government, the judiciary. So we'll watch that space. But what Donald Trump, as I said yesterday, is trying to do is he's trying to act like a king, a tin pot wannabe dictator, because he's too weak to actually govern as a president in a democracy with three co-equal branches of government. Because he's too weak to do that, because his support is indeed fractured. And so what is that truly? It is, as I said, a wannabe tin pot dictator. And what wannabe tin pot dictators who really want to become actual kings, actual autocrats, will do is align themselves with oligarchs. And history is riddled with examples of exactly this. Let's consider Tito in former Yugoslavia, Kim Jong-un in North Korea, Stalin, Mussolini, Erdogan, and of course, Putin in Russia. And let us not forget what Donald Trump has said in the past. And Aaron, I'm going to ask you to play all of these cuts that we have of Trump's positive things that he's said about Putin. And I'm going to reset my microphone while you do that.
Yes, we will give a listen now to the things that Trump has said, starting with some cuts from February of 2022, which is right around when this whole conflict began. And we will take a listen to that, and once Maggie is back, she will weigh in. So here's the first one from February 22nd in 2022.
Putin declares it as independent. Oh, that's wonderful. So Putin is now saying it's independent, a large section of Ukraine. I said, how smart is that? And he's going to go in and be a peacekeeper.
So of course, Trump worshiping Putin, as we have seen many, many times, and he continued to do so the very next day.
Yesterday, reporters asked me if I thought President Putin was smart. I said, of course he's smart, to which I was greeted with, oh, that's such a terrible thing to say. I'd like to tell the truth. Yes, he's smart.
And so those were the first two from 2022 in February.
Pretty incredible, Aaron. And let us not forget, the first cut you heard on February 22nd, the second cut was from February 23rd of February 22, and Putin invaded Ukraine on February 24th, 2022. Donald Trump's support of Vladimir Putin, his friendliness, goes back many more years than that. Of course, Trump, it has been reported that he made various attempts to build a Trump Tower in Moscow or St. Petersburg. But perhaps the most shocking of all statements that Donald Trump has ever made about Vladimir Putin was when he was asked back in 2018 about whether or not he believes his own intelligence agencies who had told him the truth, which was that Russia and its intelligence agencies interfered with, meddled, and placed false information via social media networks, spread lies to meddle, to impact the 2016 election, of course, to Donald Trump's benefit. So let's remember the question asked by the reporter those many years ago, and who Donald Trump sided with, Vladimir Putin or his own intelligence agencies. Let's take a listen to that longer cut here.
President Trump, yes. You first. Just now, President Putin denied having anything to do with the election interference in 2016. Every U.S. intelligence agency has concluded that Russia did. My first question for you, sir, is who do you believe? My second question is, would you now, with the whole world watching, tell President Putin, would you denounce what happened in 2016, and would you warn him to never do it again?
So let me just say that we have two thoughts. You have groups that are wondering why the FBI never took the server. Haven't they taken the server? Why was the FBI told to leave the office of the Democratic National Committee? I've been wondering that. I've been asking that for months and months, and I've been tweeting it out and calling it out on social media. Where is the server? I want to know, where is the server, and what is the server saying? With that being said, all I can do is ask the question. My people came to me, Dan Coats came to me and some others. They said they think it's Russia. I have President Putin. He just said it's not Russia. I will say this. I don't see any reason why it would be, but I really do want to see the server. But I have confidence in both parties. I really believe that this will probably go on for a while, but I don't think it can go on without finding out what happened to the server. What happened to the servers of the Pakistani gentleman that worked on the DNC? Where are those servers? They're missing. Where are they? What happened to Hillary Clinton's emails? 33,000 emails, gone, just gone. I think in Russia they wouldn't be gone so easily. I think it's a disgrace that we can't get Hillary Clinton's 33,000 emails. So I have great confidence in my intelligence people, but I will tell you that President Putin was extremely strong and powerful in his denial today.
Yeah. He said, I don't see any reason why it would be, meaning I don't believe that it was Russia that committed all of these election interference meddlings back in 2016. Why wouldn't he believe it? You wouldn't see any reason to believe that, would you, sir? Because it inured to your benefit. But I want to, again, get back to these historic analogs between oligarchs and wannabe dictators and those that become autocrats and dictators. Putin certainly would be one of them. Putin doesn't exist for as long as he had, doesn't have the iron grip over Russia that he has without Putin's mutually beneficial relationship with the oligarchs in Russia. Every dictator, every autocrat relies on the captains of industry, the most rich and powerful, eventually coming under their spell, if you will, entering into this sort of quid pro quo. The captains of industry, the oligarchs, wanting to remain amongst those privileged and preferred by the wannabe dictator who maybe becomes that dictator or autocrat. So again, history replete with these examples. Tito, Mussolini, Stalin, Franco in Spain, and of course, Adolf Hitler. There would have been no Hitler without the industrialists who supported him. And the parallels between that time in Germany's history and Hitler's rise to power and what is occurring today in our United States are simply undeniable. And so do not be mistaken, these issues of succumbing to our billionaire overlords, handing over the reins of power to Elon Musk in a way that he never explained to any voter, that none of us really wants. the preferencing of certain captains of industry in this country and the punishment of others is Donald Trump's effort to solidify his power, to create that mutually beneficial symbiotic relationship between a wannabe dictator and the oligarchs necessary for any autocrat to seize and retain power. So they're not two separate issues. The billionaire overlords, and as we speak, one in particular, that's not one issue with Trump's anti-democratic authoritarian power grabs and overreaches over in some other issue area. They are one and the same. And we know this not because we have a magic eight ball or a crystal ball. We know this because history has taught us that very lesson over and over and over again. Timothy Ryback is a historian and a director of the Institute for Historical Justice and Reconciliation in The Hague. He's the author of several books on Hitler's Germany, most recently a book called Takeover, Hitler's Final Rise to Power. He recently published an article in The Atlantic, which I have read and want to discuss with you. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Autocrats, dictators, and the oligarchs that created them. More when we come back right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked. 855-75-CIVIC. Join us.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back. Welcome if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. This afternoon, we're doing a bit of a deep dive, a continuation, though a pivot from yesterday's discussion about Trump's weakness, with the conclusion being he's acting like a tin pot dictator, a king, because he can't govern like a president in a democracy. We're going to see maybe a government shutdown because he won't do anything to woo a single Democratic vote on pretty much anything. You see the Trump administration gearing up, priming the electorate for a showdown with what should be a co-equal branch of government, the judiciary. What is the predicate to that showdown? Power grabs that are clearly unconstitutional, 45 lawsuits and counting, 8 injunctions and counting, not including the injunctions stopping the billionaire overlord and his minions from mucking about in our government with nearly free rein, no standards, and no one watching the so-called watchers. Today's deep dive is looking at the historical analogies, the historical lessons of wannabe dictators that do become authoritarians, and the necessity of the relationship with the billionaire overlords of their time, the oligarchs. I'm borrowing extensively from the work of historian Timothy Ryback. He is the director of the Institute for Historical Justice and Reconciliation in The Hague. And he is the author of many books on Hitler's Germany, most recently one titled Takeover, Hitler's Final Rise to Power, because Hitler's final rise to power, the dismantling of Germany's government, bears striking, almost eerily similar earmarks of Trump's second rise to power. Join our conversation, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Mark from Prairie du Sac, sir, what do you have to say?
Yeah, I'd have to say, as I've said before, is that I think a good deal of MAGA is accepting the whole fact of, you know, they want a strongman leader. And I think it is, you know, kind of echoing a lot of what we saw in the antebellum South of the Southern thinkers And some of them actually wrote that it was a, that the Confederacy was a reformation against against something that they thought considered gone mad. And it was a protest against the doctrines of natural liberty, human equality, and the social contract as taught by the, you know, the sages, that the, you know, the men of the Enlightenment, the, a lot of the founders found ideas from, yeah, that how to reform our government, and that these guys want to roll all that back. They think we should be led by, because, and what is remarkable to me is that none of these guys actually see the dangers of being in this little oligarchy, because what does it take, you know, over in Russia? I mean, if somebody falls out of favor of, with Donald Trump, they fall out of a window, or they, you know, get some poison administered to them, and that,
and he takes all their stuff, right? Like, that's the other piece of this. Thanks so much, Mark. What you also see in historical analogs, and I'm not going to spend a ton of time on this today, but I think it's worthy of returning to, so thanks for triggering this thought, Mark, is that the people in these countries, in these historical moments, have to invite the dictator in. They have to ultimately support that overthrow. And generally speaking, those moments where dictators have been able to forge these symbiotic relationships with the billionaire overlords of their day, the oligarchs, has been made possible, has been operationalized then by the regular man and woman on the street. But the emotional precondition, the priming that has to be there, is typically fear and resentment. And that fear and resentment gets harnessed and misdirected away from the dictator, away from the billionaire overlords, and it gets directed at vulnerable groups, scapegoats. And we see this again and again and again. Because when we are in a state of fear, our brain will seek the easiest off-ramp to assuage our fear. And the groups that have been over millennia scapegoated for the purposes of dictators and the oligarchs that support them are often the most weak, historically marginalized, and oppressed groups among us. Because it simply doesn't track that historically marginalized groups that have never had their hands on the reign of power or controlled the productive capacity of this country or any other are somehow magically the ones who are affecting all of the negative things that the dictator is telling you that we need to fix by further oppressing, by further suppressing, by further exploiting these groups. So when we come back after the top of the hour, we're going to take care of a little business. You're going to hear news, weather, and sports, but you're not going to want to go anywhere, because I'm going to walk you through Timothy Ryback's analysis of how Hitler forged his relationships with the oligarchs of the time back in the early 30s and late 20s in Germany, and how that led to Hitler's rise. And you can assess for yourself if that says something about our current moment, and perhaps the warning that it should be sounding, not just for us regular folks, but also to the billionaire overlords. And I'm talking to you, Elon Musk. So keep it locked right here, folks. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be back with more in just a moment.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.